if you could say your name and, you know, your position as a candidate, just so I can get a level on you.
All right. Deshaun Wilkins, candidate for State Senate, District 5.
Give me your elevator pitch here. What are you telling people as you are walking around the district and knocking on doors? What is your pitch to voters, especially in a district that has for so long been heavily Democratic?
Well, that's a very good question. I'm actually reaching out to Democrats and independents, certainly Republicans as well, to let them know that if they do the research, they'll find that I'm the only candidate that's actually ready to take on this position. My opponent was not intending to be the Democratic nominee on that side, and they're kind of making a candidate out of her so they won't lose that seat. But my 16 years of pastoring, my over 5-6 years of sitting on different boards, my 20 years of small business ownership prepares me for this position. I know how to work with folk, independents, Democrats, Republicans. I know how to work across the aisle to get things done. And that's really what this is about. Everyone's kind of focusing on the national, but, you know, our auto insurance is sky high. You know, our roads are a mess. You know, there are things that right here we need to deal with. And so I think that most people are kind of tired of the which party I'm going to vote for. Most folks say, look, what are you going to do for us? And that's where I'm at.
Describe yourself politically. You know, you're a Republican.
Yeah.
How do you fit with the party in terms of your policy positions, the party platform, especially as it sort of stands right now in the Trump era?
Well, you know, the party platform was actually prior Trump. And so I kind of tell people, you know, hey, I was a Republican before Trump became one. But, you know, the president has done some very good things economically. I mean, African-American unemployment is the lowest in history. Hispanic unemployment is the lowest in history. Overall unemployment is the lowest since 1969, I believe it is. Black small business ownership is up 400%. I don't care who's in the White House. I love those numbers. You see what I mean? And so, you know, I don't really get caught up in the personalities on the national level because, again, I tell people, I try to bring them right back to local. It's like, think about it. Over the last several years, the last 8 years before that, Michigan is only affected by what our mayor, governor, legislators do here. And so politically, I'm conservative. I've been conservative for many years. It's funny, I was a closet conservative. I really was, you know, because I didn't want the grief. You know, particularly living in Wayne County most of my life, everyone just assumes that you vote this way or you believe this. You know, my biblical teaching as a Christian and so forth, it led me to be pro-life since I can remember. In fact, if I were to really be honest about the idea, before I became a Christian, I was pro-life. I just didn't know what to call it. I just didn't believe in abortion and that sort of thing. You know, I just didn't push my views on folk, but that was my position. I started off mostly socially conservative. Became a little bit more fiscally conservative when I went into business, when I became a father, when I became a husband, you know, and I started looking at my check stubs and so forth. I said, well, wait a minute. Why am I giving tax money for this, that, and the other? I don't mind paying taxes for legitimate things, but some things were just ridiculous in my view. So I became a little bit more politically active in that regard. I think I came out of my closet during the 2016 election. You know, I have to be honest with you. For years, I didn't really care for Donald Trump as an individual. I wanted Ted Cruz to win myself. But when he went through the primary and he won, when people began to label him the classic racist and all that sort of stuff, I'm like, come on, guys, you were watching The Apprentice not even 3 weeks ago. How is he racist all of a sudden? How was he racist when him and Hillary Clinton were in pictures together? You know, their kids practically knew each other growing up. I got tired of the ridiculous rhetoric. You can disagree with a person, do that. That's fine. But I just, for a black man to constantly hear the phrase racism thrown out at any drop of a dime, it bothered me. And so I just came out, you know, and I thought that the Republican platform most closely aligns with my values. Doesn't mean that they're the party of panacea. The Democrat Party has, in my view, gone further left than Bill Clinton's party. And that was the last time I voted on a national level for Democrat. I voted for Bill Clinton the first time around. Locally, I voted for Democrats. I vote the issues. I supported Tom Barrow's first campaign. You know, I've known Tom for years. But, you know, that uphill campaign against Mike Duggan, I was sharing Facebook posts, vote for Tom Barrow. So, you know, it just depends on the issue, depends on the race. I tell folk like this, I'm my own man. My mother taught me to think for myself. Sometimes I agree with you, sometimes I won't.
And when you're knocking on doors again, when you're talking to voters again in such a heavily Democratic district, and when you tell them where you stand on those issues and align yourself with Republicans in the Trump era, you know, in many ways, are you getting pushback? Are you getting a lot of kind of, you know, well, how can you support this party that we have, you know, that we have not supported as a district before?
You know, I would say if I were to give it a number from 1 to 10, I'd say maybe 2, 3 out of 10 will ask the question, why are you Republican? And not really from an antagonistic perspective, just kind of, I'm kind of confused. You know, why would you be Republican? And then after the conversation, probably 2 out of those 3 were saying, well, you know, you got my vote. And so every so often I'll get a guy who, you know, you're Republican, I'll never vote Republican, you know, what's wrong with you, you're part of the problem, you're worse than Trump. You know, every once in a while you'll get that. I ignore folk like that because at the end of the day, they're blinded by their hate. You know, I was taught a long time ago by my grandmother who was raised in the South, you never become what was done to you. You know, if hate was afflicted against you, don't become that. And you can disagree with folk, you can like them from a distance, whatever, but don't hate. And so most of the folk that I've spoken with are very supportive. It is amazing. If win or lose, just the people I've met knocking doors has been very incredible. I'm finding that I'm gaining most of my support from independents and what we would call light Democrats, who are just not interested in voting for my opponent because of how she got to be the nominee. They feel if a vote for her would be a vote for her campaign manager. And I tend to agree with that. Very nice lady, but this is the game for the big boys, and you have to be ready for this. It can't be I'm going to rely on the advice of someone who asked me to get on the ballot when none of us expected us to win. So
let's talk, what would be your priorities as a state senator? What are maybe the 2 or 3 issues that you are most laser focused on right now?
Auto insurance. Michigan has the highest in the nation auto insurance. And my 9-to-5 is selling auto insurance and other such products for a local company. And I can tell you, it's heartbreaking when someone calls and says, well, look, I want to get just basic PLPD insurance, and you give them a quote that's $700 a month for a 2005 vehicle. You know, I mean, it's amazingly ridiculous. We don't have choice as it relates to our auto insurance. If someone wants to keep the incredible benefits that are within the insurance, the auto insurance package, they should be allowed to keep it. But some folk don't want that. The coordination of benefits isn't 100% the way it should be. The Affordable Care Act allowed for coordination of benefits, but when you look at some of the companies that do business in Michigan, they don't coordinate benefits perfectly, so that leaves people out. Also, the rating relative to non-driving factors, age, zip code, credit scores. Those, I had a guy tell me, he says, well, your credit score tells me how irresponsible or how responsible you would be. I said, so what about the person who lost their job and lost their house and their credit score dropped, but they were on time with their payments all the time? See, again, it's a flawed system in my view, and I think those things need to be considered definitely changing. The medical fee schedule. If I get an MRI for a neck ache, whatever, and let's say my insurance pays $200 to the facility, but if I get in an auto-related accident, they can charge $1,200, $1,500, and you can have multiple MRIs, whereas my insurance on a non-auto-related injury or issue may only limit me to so many. See, those things must be balanced out. The customers, the consumers are being hit dramatically with all of these high rates, and the legislature heretofore hasn't been serious. And I tell you another thing, a lot of the out-of-state legislators, Senate or otherwise, they haven't been motivated. But now the rates are getting higher out there, you see. And I see it. I get calls not from Detroiters. These are suburbanites who are being hit with incredibly high auto insurance. And see, now folk are running on that. So that's I would say, my primary.
I just want to follow up on that one, and we'll talk more about other issues.
Sure.
But how would you deal with specifically PIP and the MCCA? What would you do? You're saying that you make that essentially optional for people.
Yes. I've heard the argument that if you make it optional, then PIP would be damaged essentially and it wouldn't work. That's ridiculous. I mean, options are all over the place for all kind of different services and other type of insurance-related products throughout the country. And then I also reject the idea that Michigan has to be the only state in the entire nation that must have it this way, or the people in Michigan are going to just die a miserable death. Well, what about the other 48 states? Hmm. What is done in those states? So, again—
So would you support a cap on benefits?
I don't know if I support a cap. I think the option to opt out is really more where I'm coming from. I mean, my boss at the agency I work with, you know, he and I had a talk, and he said, you know, if I had the option, I'd buy it with the medical insurance because I know what it can offer. And see, and that's an option. Let someone have the option. It's like helmets. We have now motorcycles can ride their motorcycles without. Motorcycle riders can ride their motorcycles without a helmet. They can choose to. You say, well, if they fall, it's going to fall back on all of us. Not necessarily. See, again, we do these absolutes, but we're not open for the gray area in the middle. If you want to ride your motorcycle 70 miles an hour down the Lodge Freeway without a helmet, it should be your right. It should be your choice. And that's where I'm from. I'm for individual choice. If a person wants the benefits, let them have it. Hmm. Let them, you know, they're incredible benefits. They are incredible. And I am not one to say take them away, but I want the choice. That's where I'm from.
Hmm. So what would you do as state senator? How would you approach the hospitals association, the folks that are really trying to make sure that they are not negatively? I mean, it seems like the stalemate is really insurance companies, hospitals, sure. Big lobbying forces in Lansing that have essentially created this, like I said, stalemate that hasn't been able to move in decades. How do you, as a state senator, deal with that?
Well, I mean, let's be honest. They benefit financially. They're fighting for an income stream to keep it intact, and they're putting pressure on legislators. They put Granny up on the billboard and say, you want to take away her benefits. And I'll be honest with you. I think a lot of the citizens are tired of it. They see through it. Again, I'm for choice. Just give the citizens a choice. I would never say take it all away. Because guess what? There are people who have benefited from it. But again, give me the choice. Right now, we have people who are driving dirty, as we call it, because they can't afford the insurance. So let's follow this here. I can't afford the insurance, so I drive my car without the insurance. If I get into a car accident without the insurance, I don't have the benefit of PIP anyway. Or, not so drastic, if I'm driving the car without insurance and I get pulled over, I have a major problem on my hands. So then my car is taken. I get incredible ticket to all of these different things. I lose my job. Now I can't afford to feed my family, which, again, is a cycle. And this cycle is happening mostly in Detroit, Flint, places like that, the urban areas. And again, let's not talk about how much we care about the well-being of individuals, but we're putting this burden on their back and mandating them to do it. The hospitals and all of the rest of these guys, they're trying to protect their profits. I am not interested in big corporate entities protecting their profits on our back.
Now, how would you feel about an all-or-nothing approach, which has been sort of the approach, especially from Republican leadership in Lansing, that there have been bills that would essentially create a fraud authority. They would get rid of the what a lot of people call insurance redlining that happens based on zip code.
Sure.
But it doesn't address PIP. It doesn't address the healthcare side directly. How would you take that deal to make progress?
Progress is important. I supported the bill that Mayor Duggan and Tom Leonard put forth on the table last year. It was a step in the right direction. It did not cover everything that needed to be done, but I thought it was foolish to not support something that literally carried the football three quarters away down the field. There were those who said, well, if we support this, it'll never come back again. Well, I mean, that's a pessimistic view. Let's deal with what we can. Let's win where we can win and show the people that, look, we can cooperate and get some things done. I was very disappointed when that bill didn't pass. I was actually supposed to be in Lansing when they had the press conference. I was invited by Speaker Leonard, but I had another engagement. But I really, really, really been passionate about this for quite a while. If you can't get everything you want, you should try to get as much as you can. That's what compromise is. And that's what we're missing in the legislature. And I can be honest with you. My opponent has been prepped to be pro-Democrat. I'm trying to be pro-people. Yes, I'm a Republican. But there are independents, Democrats, and Republicans that will be affected by the policies that we put forth. And at the end of the day, it's about the people, not the party.
Hmm. We've talked a lot about auto insurance. What would be another one of your really the top issues that you'd look for solutions as a state senator?
Well, one of them would be promotion of skilled trades. Years ago, even when I was in, junior high, maybe going into high school, skilled trades was taken out of the schools. And now we have a situation where people are getting college educated, but they can't find careers in their field. And no one knows how to do anything with their hands. And we now have an incredible amount of skilled trades opportunities where people can start off 40, 50 grand a year. But the problem is people don't qualify to get those jobs. And so I think we can do a much better job at promoting skilled trades. I think we can find some corporate partnerships where we can be more specific with the skills that they themselves are exactly looking for, so that you're not going to some trade school, learning the skill, and still not being placed within a company. So Corporation A is looking for 5,000 workers. Well, let's funnel those people into very specific programs that they get very specific skills so that they can get a very specific job. Mm. In my opinion, that is a better approach than arbitrarily raising the minimum wage on every employer. And people don't understand this. When you raise a minimum wage $3 or $4, those labor costs will hit every employer, not just the big companies, but small business owners that have 3 or 4 employees. You're going to put people out of work that way. I think let's increase the skill set of individuals so that they can be more marketable while they're trying to get jobs in different careers. Another thing is the repeal of the pension tax. My goodness, why in the world would we raise taxes on seniors who have worked for so many years to get a pension, and now you just chopped into their money? We need to repeal that.
I think, and that was a policy put in place by Governor Snyder and Republicans to balance their budget when
absolutely.
They came in.
So we budget our balance. We balanced our books on the back of seniors. I think it's a ridiculous idea. Mm. And that's an example of, I don't care if it's a party thing, it's a wrong thing. We need to repeal that senior pension. I call it the senior pension tax, but it's a pension tax. I also think that there's a lot of momentum to, if not eliminate, but definitely bring the individual tax back to the grand home years. And we can at least get it back to 3.9. Mm-hmm. I would love to eliminate it. I'm running on eliminating it. And there are people, it won't work. It never happened. And then when they shot down that bill that was placed, last year, the state had a surplus. I said, well, there's the money right there. But see, people on both sides of the aisle, they're not interested in solving that problem. They want more of the people's money, and they want to spend it arbitrarily. No, Lansing needs to be on a budget, just like you and I have to be on a budget. Hmm.
Well, eliminating the personal income tax,
yes,
that would blow a huge hole in the budget. I mean, you'd have to, no matter what the surplus is, you would have to find billions of dollars,
sure,
in other spending cuts to replace. So where would you find that?
Well, again, that surplus would have been a big chunk. That would have helped. It wouldn't have eliminated the hole, as you say. I think another thing is, how about doing a forensic audit on how our money is being spent throughout the state. Are there areas where we're spending redundantly on similar programs? We can tighten that area up. If there's spending, from my understanding, as an example, if they allocate a certain amount of money to a particular program, and every year they allocate more, but the program didn't spend as much last time, well, why are we constantly going up on the allocation? How about we give the funds in proportion to what's being spent? So if a community group, whatever, gets, let's use small numbers, $1,000 a year. Well, if they didn't spend $1,000, they only spent $500, why are we offering them $2,000 next year? See, again, that kind of legislative thinking when it comes to the people's money, I think we need to change that.
Is there an example that you've seen of that?
Right offhand, I can't think of one particularly. It's been a while since I read about it. But what I have learned is that budgets in government is a much different than it is on the individual level. We may never get to the point where we can eliminate it. But I think we should try. The thought is, let's not try because we can't do it. Again, that's bureaucratic thinking. My thing is, let's give it a shot. If we end up at 3.9, it's the people's money. We were supposed to go back to 3.9. It was promised. See, and they raised our taxes to do what? Fix the roads. Oh, wait a minute. The roads aren't fixed. They're still a mess. And see, again, it's this kind of thinking that the people are very tired of. And again, I'm unabashedly not a politician. I don't need to be a politician. I've been a pastor for 16 years. I work a 9-to-5. And I'll do that whether I'm elected or not. Or if I'm elected, when my time is up, I go back to work. See what I mean? People want individuals, not career politicians, not someone who's getting this position so they can get to the next position, so they can get to the next position. See, that's what's wrong with our system right now.
Mm. You mentioned the minimum wage earlier. The legislature just adopted the ballot campaign so that it didn't go to the ballot to raise the minimum wage eventually to $12 an hour and, I believe, eliminate the tipped wage as well. Which would just bring all service jobs up to that $12 an hour level. Would you be in favor of the legislature coming back in lame duck and essentially gutting that law?
Well, a lot of legislators do that. They take it off the table, and then a lame duck session, they'll pass this or pass that. If it came up during the next legislature, I would not have a problem with that. I have no problem with $12 an hour as a minimum wage. I think we were going there anyway. Waiters and waitresses getting more money, I don't have a problem with that. In fact, I had a waitress tell me she'd actually have a pay cut if that went into place. But again, because she gets a lot of tips and so forth. So, I'm more favored, though, having the opportunity for small businesses to set their wages when it comes to the waiters and waitresses. If you don't want to take a job at that particular company because that's how they do things, you can go somewhere else where they are offering you a more traditional minimum wage scenario. Again, I'm all for choice. We try to mandate everything, and we never think about the unintended consequences. Look at what's happening at McDonald's now. I went to McDonald's yesterday. They have kiosks in the lobby. Those kiosks are McDonald's answer to the push for $15 an hour minimum wage. So eventually McDonald's is going to say, we're on board. But guess what? Notice when you walk into those lobbies of those restaurants now, there's maybe one person up front now because you have to go to the kiosk to get your order. That's three or four people that are out of jobs because you pushed the issue. Again, most of the people who are pushing this have no idea of what labor cost is in a business. Moreover, minimum wage was supposed to be a minimum. It was never supposed to be lifetime. The issue is we have gotten away from teaching our citizens skills, and I think that's the better approach. In the old days, think about it. My grandparents, your grandparents, they learned skills, and they made more money during their lifetime than we do now. They drive different cars if they want now. We're still trying to get a car. What happened? They have a pension now. We can't get pensions now. See, we switched things. We got people away from skills, and now we have an incredible amount of our citizenry that don't have skill sets that are marketable. The issue is, let's teach people how to make things, build things, whatever the skill is, and then they can make money on their own. rather than arbitrarily lifting minimum wage. The mm-hmm. final thing about that, what do you do to the people who are already making $15, who are already making $20 an hour and it took them 20 years to get there? See, no one wants to talk about that because the idea would be, well, we have to raise them up. They're going to get this part first, and then they're going to come back to the table and say, oh, yeah, by the way, now we have to deal with the folk who are making $20 an hour, because it's not fair that you brought Johnny up to 15 where he was at 10, and now John is at 20. You got to take him to 25. See, it's not going to stop. It's not going to stop. I am so conscious of the fact that there's so many of our people who are making nothing. They need help. I just think it's wrongheaded to just arbitrarily everyone must do this. Hmm. I don't think that's the right approach.
So just to be clear, on the $12 minimum wage that has been adopted by the legislature, yeah. if that came up while you were a state senator, you would vote no on a bill that would bring it back to the current minimum wage?
I would support a $12 minimum wage.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. Again, because I from everything I've read, the current law was in that direction anyway. Mm.
It was indexed to inflation, yeah, so eventually exactly. You get there anyway.
You're going to get there anyway. I do have a problem with all of a sudden, you know, ABC small business, 15 employees automatically now. They have to jump from 10 an hour to 15, or I mean to 12, pardon me. I think that may be a challenge, but I think maybe putting in there a buffer, maybe the buffer won't be several years. Maybe be several months. You have to make the adjustment. But I think we're fooling ourselves if we think that there won't be layoffs because of this. There will be companies that will lay off. You can say greedy corporations, but not every corporation is big or greedy. Some folk, they just have to adjust to the mandate. And again, I think we have a society that we're so focused on mandating things that we're not looking at the unintended consequence that will hurt very well-meaning people who are making a living. I think we got to do both. If you're going to mandate these things, give it time. You know, well, you say, well, Johnny's family doesn't have time. Well, but what about Billy's family? You see what I mean? We get supporters and we say, let's do this, you know, all or nothing. But I don't think we're considering the cost.
You see it as picking winners and losers,
yeah,
kind of situation.
It's exactly picking winners and losers. And the funny thing about this, but then we'll turn right back around and we'll offer Apple billions of dollars in tax breaks. We'll build stadiums for individuals who have their own money to build it. Come on. Are you kidding? That's why I'm against corporate welfare. You know, I mean, when I was a small business owner, I couldn't get a loan. Are you kidding? I couldn't get a loan. I couldn't get love. Okay. When I had a few different employees and we would clean different apartment complexes and so forth, I was trying my best to make payroll. Arbitrary increase in the minimum wage would have put me out of business. And ultimately, it didn't help me in the end, which is why I'm selling insurance now. You see what I mean? I understand the dynamics of labor costs and so forth. But again, why are we giving corporations all this money, these big companies, multimillionaires? Well, if you don't give it to them, then they won't come in the city. Hogwash. Hogwash.
Yeah, so let me give you an example, which actually would not be here in the city, although there's plenty of those to choose from.
Sure.
But just a few years ago, on the west side of the state in Grand Rapids, yeah, a giant tech firm wanted to build a data center here,
sure,
in Michigan. It went through, and the argument was, if we don't give them these tax abatements, if we don't give them these tax incentives, mm-hmm, to come to Michigan,
yeah,
they're going to go to Indiana, they're going to go to wherever, Wisconsin, somewhere else other than Michigan. You think that, and you know, I'm putting you on the spot here,
sure, no,
but that's the sort of thing that you think is should not have happened in that case.
I agree. I do not support arbitrarily just offering up the kitchen sink to get someone to come and do business in your state. I think, yes, there should be negotiations. Yes, when they come to the table, it says, well, we're pitting you against Indiana. Well, how about we, what else can we offer this company other than tax abatements to get them here? See what I mean? One of the things that a lot of the companies will say is, well, we're going to bring so many jobs, and they're going to be good paying jobs. Those jobs are often minimum wage jobs. And a lot of times the statistics that bore out to be the case that what was promised never actually comes to pass. And guess what? We got suckered again. So we can say we lured another business here. What about the businesses that come here because they want to be in Michigan? So we never highlight them, and they didn't need a tax break. See what I mean? Again, we're playing with someone else's money, and it's easy to spend someone else's money. But it's never easy to spend your own money. And that's what I'm hoping to bring to Lansing is a sense of responsibility. This is not our money, and we need to be responsible with it. And someone asked me the other day, they said, well, Republicans have been in charge. Yeah, they spent like Democrats, and they need to stop. So, I guess he thought I was going to, you know, try to defend it. I'm not defending it. You know, the House, the Senate, and the governorship has been under Republican control, and we spent like drunken sailors. We need to stop. Mm.
And to be fair, I mean, that kind of thing, the corporate, as you say, the corporate welfare issues, they usually break down bipartisan support and bipartisan opposition.
Yeah,
I mean, those are not partisan issues. They come down a little different single time, it seems like.
That's true.
So I know we've been going for a while now. We've been going on a half an hour here. But I'm curious, what else should voters know about you? What else should voters keep in mind as they're going in the 5th District to the polls and they see your name next to Betty Jean Alexander's? What do you hope they're thinking about?
Well, I've been, since October of 2017, actively going around trying to get support and talking to the citizens. As of April of this year, knocking on doors, going to community events, candidate forums, seeking to earn the support of the citizens to be their next state senator. I'm not here because of any political shenanigans. In fact, from the very beginning, I boned up on everything that I can learn to face Senator Kinesic. Okay? I intended from the beginning to support the citizens of District 5 to become their representative in Lansing. It's not about Democrat or Republican. It's about, will you get the job done when you're there? I think one thing must be considered as well, and I've said this to a lot of Republicans over the last 12 months. The reason why Republicans don't do good here is because Republicans don't try. I mean, when was the last time we had a legitimate candidate on the ballot for this seat? We've had names on the ballot. 2014, the name on the ballot had 18.2%. 2010, the name on the ballot has 16.7%, just names on the ballot. I've actually run for this seat, and I believe that the citizens deserve an option, a choice. I want independents and Democrats to know I will represent everyone. Yes, I'm a Republican. No, you're not going to agree to everything. But at the end of the day, I'm here to represent you. I don't represent a party as much as I represent you. There may be times when I will not agree with my party. Guess what? It happens because I don't agree with no one, or anyone, I should say. My mother would be mad. I don't agree with anyone 100% on anything. But again, this is about the people. And I think people are tired of partisan politics. Listen, we've gone so far to the right, so far to the left. What about the middle? I'm a conservative. But at the end of the day, we have people who are leaving the party, both parties, because they are tired of the fact that we can't work together. I have 16 years of pastoring, 20 years of small business ownership, years I've been on boards and different things. I know how to work with folk. And let's just be honest. I've lived in Wayne County 44, 45 years of my 47 years of life. I've been surrounded by Democrats all of my life, my family, my church, Democrats, the organization that I'm a board member of, Democrats, our diocese for our Christian denomination. I sit on the board, Democrats. Guess what? I know how to work with Democrats. You can't just get into a bubble of consistent thought that agrees with you. You have to be willing to talk with people who won't agree with you, but you have to be civil. We've lost civility, and I think we need to gain it back. Further and finally, when you vote for me, you're voting for me. When you vote for my opponent, you're voting for her campaign manager. Let's just be honest, okay? He had a beef with the current senator and placed her on the ballot and hoping to make Senator Kinesic to lose some votes. I mean, spend some money, pardon me. They never intended for him to lose, but guess what? He did. And so now, understand, if you vote for me, you get me. I'm here. I have a social media presence. I've had one for years. I'm not easy to look up. But where is Betty Jean Alexander? That's what everyone wanted to know. Why? Because it was never her intent. Very nice lady, I'm sure. No aspersions cast against her. But at the end of the day, you need to know what you're dealing with. And this is why I think I'm getting support from independents and Democrats. Democrats are calling me every day. I'm voting for you. I can't go public with it, but I'm voting for you.
Really quick, yes, and this is a little out of left field.
Okay.
As a state senator, do you caucus with Republicans or Democrats?
Republicans, absolutely. Absolutely.
I figured that would be your answer.
Oh, yeah. See, and that's the thing. I caucus with Republicans. I stand with Republicans. But at the end of the day, I can work with Democrats. And that's how you get things done. You have to be able to work with others. But I stand on my conservative principles. I'm a Republican. If I wanted to, I tell someone, you know, well, why are you a Republican? Because I'm a Republican. Well, why don't you be a Democrat? You have some issues that are Democrat issues. Since when did those become Democrat issues? Why can't they be people issues? Corporate welfare is a people issue. Repealing the pension tax, that's a people issue. So I'm going to caucus with Republicans, but my focus is giving District 5 the representation that it deserves in Lansing. And sometimes I may not always agree with my caucus, but at the end of the day, I'm a Republican, and that's why I ran on that side.
And you'd be the only person from Detroit in that caucus room. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, yeah. And again, you've never had that before. Mm-hmm. There's no template for that. Well, guess what? There's no template to me either.
Anything else you want to add before we end up here?
Just remember Deshaun Wilkins on November the 6th. Go to my website, deshaunwilkins.com. That's DeshaWN Wilkins, WILKINS. Wilkins.com. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter, Instagram. I'm all over the place. I'm an open book. You can ask me questions. There are a lot of times people go on a Facebook page. They'll send a question. They'll send me an email. I'm here. I'm not hiding. No question is too difficult. And I don't mind being blindsided with questions that I didn't prepare for. Why? Because I want to represent you. So please remember Deshaun Wilkins on November 6th. Don't worry about the idea from a lot of the media that says she is automatically going to Lansing. I don't believe that one bit, and you shouldn't either. This same media said that Hillary Clinton would be our president, and guess what? They were wrong, and I believe they're going to be wrong right now too. So please, again, so humbly, I request that you go to my website, deshaunwilkins.com. I would love to serve you. I'm not here to serve the Republican Party or any other party or special interest. I'm here to serve you, and I would love so kindly to have your vote.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.